Okay, so I'm here. This is Ali Alberigo, and welcome to another teleseminar. This is a great opportunity for me. I'm honored, of course, to be here, as I always am, with you guys. And for some of you, you may be listening live, while others may be downloading and listening late at night, or just on your leisure. Either way, I applaud everyone for taking the step towards being the best that they can be. It's amazing to me at how many people are excited about actually, you know, growing their business and, you know, running a professional martial arts school. But, you know, some of you know people that just dream of doing while others wish they could do. And I'm hoping that all of you who are listening are actually the people who are doing. I think it's exciting that the listeners have given me the opportunity to write, allowing me to share my thoughts with others as well as speak on these teleseminars. And I'm honored that most of you read my emails and listen to past teleconferences. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. Just recently, I wrote an article for NATMA Black Belt Training Tips. Within this article, I spoke about the mentality that I'm sure most of you have discussed or live with and have discussed with your students on a regular basis, the desire to be great. We all know how easy it is to talk about it, but how many people actually live their lives that way? What is it that takes a person from mediocrity to greatness? What is it that fills a person with the desire to be amazing? I remember when I was growing up, I wanted to be a rock star. For those of you who don't know me, this is a little trivia for you. I was in an 80s hair metal band, and I was the guitarist and the lead vocalist. Many of you probably have heard or had friends who played in garage bands or went to a battle of the bands when you were in school. But for me, this was different. It wasn't just about playing in a garage. I knew I was in control of my destiny. I knew the harder I worked, the better off I would be. While others sit around and wait to be discovered, from the age of 8 years old, I was recording my own music, original music, performing live, and writing my own material. I actually wanted it so bad, I wanted to be a rock star so bad, that it actually hurt in the pit of my stomach. And this isn't an example or an expression. It really physically hurt in the bottom of my stomach. I sometimes feel that way about my martial arts school and other business ventures that I'm involved with. There, of course, I've grown up and matured slightly so that that actual physical pain is not there because I'm able to control my emotions. But I do have that same feeling at times, and I wished I didn't, but it's kind of the drive that I think I have and that I speak about on a regular basis when talking, teaching, and living my own life. In the NATMA article, I called it Truly Knowing. I just recently read an amazing book called The Unthinkable, If and When Disaster Strikes by Amanda Ripley. I recommend it to everyone. It's called Unthinkable, The Unthinkable. In one section, she talks about people performing in stressful times, during disasters such as floods, fires, terrorist attacks, wars, etc. I thought it was amazing. Statistically, the people who remained calm and reacted, they saved their own lives. And they were very different from others in a few distinctive ways. One, the people who reacted and acted calm had a different part of their brain light up, more so than the others, which enabled them to react and think simultaneously while others just froze and awaited instructions. They waited for those instructions to the point where some of them sat to their death just waiting. Scarily, in one situation during the Hollywood Country Club fire back in the 70s, firemen actually came in after the fire was all put out and all said and done, and they found people actually literally sitting around a table with drinks in hand, scorched to death. You may be saying to yourself, wow, how could this be true? The reality is that they didn't have the ability to function on their own unless they had clear directions. And I feel, as a consultant, at times this happens with my martial art clients. Why and how does this pertain to your life as a martial art instructor? Simply put, in order for you to perform, it's not about finding a system only or learning about sales and marketing only or whatever else. It's about learning and doing until you become an expert. We have all had the question from our students that said, Sensei, when am I going to be able to do this or that move, the jumping spinning kick or the flip or the more advanced technique? And we normally, as instructors, because I know I do, respond in the typical fashion, when you're ready. Just be patient, right? This is all stuff that we do. We'll tell them in due time. What makes you, as a business owner, any different from your students? If you're not training yourself, then inevitably the system, whatever you're performing, is going to fail. Remember, it's a matter of making your activity a habit. If you do not do it enough to make it a habit, then you'll never get used to it and never stick to it for any long period of time. In my research, the definition of knowing, and you guys could use this for your students, it's a powerful statement, the definition of knowing is being able to perform at a subconscious level without thought. Let me say that again. The definition of knowing is being able to perform at a subconscious level without any thought. What is normal for you? I think it sounds like I have someone on the line, so remember to mute yourself by hitting *6 so that we don't hear any background noise. So again, what is the definition of knowing? Being able to perform at a subconscious level without any thought. What is normal for you? What is knowing for you? In business, what is it that you do? As in working out at the gym to build muscles, we need to continually train our muscles or they atrophy and get lazy. The brain is the same way. Trust me on this. I've lived the high life for a period of time, and my body kind of forgot what it was like to work hard physically, actually get out there like I used to when I owned my own landscape construction company, digging trenches and digging holes and so on. My brain remembers because that's the logical thinking. You know, the brain is remembers that, but my body didn't. And I'm sure that this has happened to you. Some of us are instructors. We used to be able to perform techniques and do push-ups. Then we got into the teaching business, and we haven't done as many as we used to when we were students. And we're not able to perform. We live our lives sometimes. Not everybody. We live our lives through our students. You know, we speak that, you know, what we want to do. We tell students what to do. But sometimes we're not living the lifestyle anymore. And there's nothing wrong with that because there's a point in your life where you're not going to be able to do what you used to do a long time ago. So what is it that I'm talking about, and how does it pertain to closing out the last quarter with extreme success? Because that's the title of this topic that we're going over. Now, let me give you a few things to think about. Here's my answer. Number one, a few things that you could do. Number one is I want you to look at your systems and reevaluate what you're doing and if you're doing them well. For example, about 3 months ago, we embarked in my schools on a rather lofty marketing campaign. Of course, being affected by the economy, we were a little cautious. But I forged ahead. You know, we put into place an 8-month campaign of television spots where we're running 60 spots a week. We did direct mail. We did cold calling, plus a few other minor campaigns. And I can share all of these campaigns with you guys if you're interested. Just email me at renshi.li.ninja@aol.com. That's renshi.li.ninja@aol.com. And I'll send you a link to my website where you can see these campaigns and just print them out and do them yourselves. Lo and behold, with my TV spots, it took 8 weeks before we actually got a call that was legitimate and signed that person up. Now we're starting to get calls on a regular basis. The thing was not getting the calls. It was the following up on the calls. It didn't matter if the phone was ringing, or it doesn't matter in your school if the phone is ringing, you're getting walk-ins or you're getting trial classes, if you're not signing up and selling those people. My point being, getting the calls is not all that matters. It's really marketing. You have to look at your calls. I don't know if any of you are tracking to actually see the number of walk-ins and prospects that you're getting. Because if you're getting 20 or 30 of those a month or 10 of them a month, hopefully you should be signing up a small percentage or a good percentage of those if you're really good. So the thing is not getting the calls. It's following up on the calls. It's following up on the leads. It doesn't matter if the phone rings and you're not signing those people up, because then there's a fault in where, you know, whatever your sign-up process is. If you're not good at signing those people up, then you have to reevaluate your systems. If you have a system, then you need to make sure it's working. Or reevaluate it and tweak it and get the system to work better. Number one is I want you to reevaluate those systems and look at them with an investigative eye and see if it's just a system for the sake of system. For example, I always talk about 2-4-6-8-10-week calls. This is where we should communicate with our clients. We should ask for referrals. We should be talking to them on a regular basis. If we're not doing that consistently, then what's the sense of even having the system in place? There is no sense. The bottom line is, if you're going to do something, do it well. It's like we always do when we talk to our students. If you're going to do something, do it well. Don't come and join the school and only come once in a blue moon. Come as much as you can, or at least on a consistent basis. I'd rather see a student be consistent once a week for 3 years rather than sporadic here and there. Number two, take the time to make sure you are really doing well at what you do. Here's the concept that's very elusive to consultants in our industry. And let me be clear, I'm not bashing other consultants, but I just think that I come from an entirely different paradigm. My thoughts are more out of the box than you may think. Even though that what I say might make perfect sense when you hear it, you would say that common sense is not so common, right? That's the saying, common sense is not so common. Here's a question to ponder. When was the last time you did a special event? How was that turnout on the special event? If you think the event was great, here's the final pin that may burst your bubble, as I know it did for me when I was taught to think this way. Let's say, for example, you have 100 students in your school, small school or medium-sized school, and on your special event, whether it be a movie night for children or a seminar with training and so on, you had 40 people show up to the event. It might seem like the response was good. It's about, you know, whatever, almost half your student enrollment. Now, let's say that this is your situation. Now, I ask you, out of those 40 people that have came, that have come to your event, how many of those people come to your events on a regular basis? How many of the same people come to each one of your special events, and they're the bulk of the people? When you look at these individuals that do come to the event, those people should be rewarded. Now, this is a big question. Out of the people who don't come to the event, what do you do to get them on board? Another question is, are those people not even interested in the event? Are you looking at this from an investigative point of view? Does it appeal to the demographic? I'm going to use my book that I just wrote. I wrote a book on my martial art called 21st Century Ninjutsu, and I sold a good amount of copies to my students, but the parents are not even in that demographic for some reason. Mostly the people who purchased the book were adults with some teens, really mostly adults. And why is it that the parents are not buying it and reading it to their children, or at minimum reading it to themselves so that they get a better understanding of what I am as a teacher and what we do in my school? Simply put, they don't believe that it's beneficial to them, so they're not going to go out and buy it. So I, as a marketer, need to get them to think differently. I need to get them to realize it's good for them and create that desire. What can I do to reach into the pockets of the population that's untapped? The question you have to ask yourself, out of those 40 members or 50 members that attended your event, why is it that the other 50 people are not even coming? The real question is, maybe it is not appealing to them. So can you alter the event, tweak it slightly to make it more beneficial to your client base so that in turn you're going to get a better turnout and you're going to reach out to more of the people in your student population? For example, if you have a group of little 3 to 5-year-olds and you're doing a seminar on grappling, the chances are that most of the parents are not going to bring those children. The question that you have to ask yourself is, how can you change that program so that more of those parents will come? Can you do a mommy and me or a dad and daughter or a parent and child grappling seminar? Can they do it together? What is it? The question that you need to ask yourself is, what can you do to make it more appealing? Don't just keep on repeating the same process. Remember that old saying that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. So what is it that we could do to make whatever event that we're doing appeal to the majority, you know, 80% of our population? I suggest, too, calling those people that aren't going and asking them why. Find out clearly why they didn't attend. Some of them may say they were busy that day. Others may say they forgot about it. But what is it that you could do to tap into your population, to that gold mine that you're sitting on? Number 3, I think that we need to tie in our retail to the desire of the client. Let me repeat myself on that. Tie in your retail to the client's desire. Here's another question to ponder. Do you sell T-shirts in your school with your name on it? The typical school T-shirt that we all have. Like when I go to the Super Show and I see every karate school walking around with a T-shirt, and I'm sure you guys are going to shake your head, guys meaning guys and girls, of course, that the typical T-shirt is standard name, logo, sometimes terrible logo, but sometimes nice logo, but name and logo. It kind of looks like the same shirt that a construction company would put out, except it's a martial arts school. We need to ask ourselves, and first of all, before we ask ourselves this next question, how much do you charge for the T-shirt? I assume anywhere between $10 and $15. That's what I charge in my school. So recently I asked myself, why are people buying shirts? And allow me to go a little deeper, like the Affliction line, which is selling between $50 and $70 for a T-shirt. Why would anyone spend $70 on a T-shirt? Well, the answer is because It is something that the consumer wants. It's cool. It's hip. It's in. Now, people are still, they'll go to a concert to see a band and pay $40 for a t-shirt. And they don't have any hard time selling out those shirts. The simple answer to this is that we're not appealing to our customer. Most t-shirts have that look of the plain lettering. And it's not something that's worn out to dinner or to hang out with friends. So I have a student actually in my school that he controls a multi-million dollar retail operation. And he was talking to me about my shirts, and he said that I love wearing your shirt in the dojo to train, but your shirt doesn't have a hip design that I would wear out to dinner with a friend or, you know, wear it to the mall or just wear it on a Sunday. You know, we need to actually design or appeal to our consumer. We have to make it less billboardish, if that's a word, or plain or commercially plain. We need to start thinking about what the population of our consumers wear. So have two t-shirts, maybe a different design. Imagine if you had a cool t-shirt, your students would buy it for friends as a Christmas present and give it to them. They wouldn't feel embarrassed or shy about wearing it out in the public. So the question is, what is your untapped retail market, your resource? What pot of gold are you sitting on? Here's some five questions I want you to ask yourself. Number one, what systems are you currently using and how efficient or beneficial are they to you? Can you fix or tweak those systems so that they're more beneficial? Or is it a system just for the sake of a system? Number two, what is your retail looking like? But don't just think retail. Think upgrades. Remember, if it's a good and a valuable item, people are going to buy it. If they don't see a value in it, it's going to be a hard sell. If you have a particular program or an item that isn't selling, ask yourself why. And possibly ask your consumer. I know for me, the biggest fear, and I'll give you another example, is I just recently wrote a children's book. The book is called The Three Kings. It's not published yet, but I sent out a mass email to all my clients that are in my Taking It to the Next Level program and my students and martial arts schools all over, and I got an overwhelming response for people to read the book and tell me what their thoughts were. This kind of showed me that it was different than my book that I thought was generally for the entire population, but it was perceived as being more an adult-based book. And I started getting school owners and parents contacting me. I only was looking for 10 people, and I got about 60 people that offered to read my book and tell me what they thought. The interesting thing was that I needed to know what was going to appeal to them. I wanted to find out what their thoughts were. So I did a questionnaire, and it was a painful thing to send out because I was fearful of the answers that I would get back. I was wondering whether they liked it or not. Thank goodness the majority of people that I sent it to had positive responses. But what's stopping you from asking your clients? Normally, it's the fear of finding out something negative. But I would do a questionnaire. I would send it out to the clients. I'd do an email version of it, even if it's five or six questions, to really get the overall truth. And the best way to get results is to do it anonymously, because people won't tell you that you stink to your face. But if they know that they could send out the email or the information or anonymously, they'll tell you. And sometimes you'll get great ideas. So number two is, what is your retail looking like? But really, not just retail, your programs. And remember, if it's not a valuable product that people buy into, then you're not going to sell much of it. Number three, look at the special events and use a student grid. You may have heard me talk about this in the past. What we recommend, especially for my Taking It to the Next Level program, is creating a student grid. This basically is simple enough to go into an Excel spreadsheet and write down your students from 1 to 100 or whatever you have. Separate different categories, what programs you have. For example, in my school, we have a basic program, a gold program, a platinum program, Black Belt Club, Masters Elite, team leadership, character development. And look at the pockets of people that sit in a specific program. Like, for instance, when you look at your student grid when it's completed, you might find out that 75% of your enrollment is sitting within your basic program. So that tells you that 75% of those people are upgradable to a more advanced program, a more extensive program, a more costly program, more profitable program. You may also want to write down how many of all your students attended your last special event. And you're going to see when you sort it, you're going to find out small populations of your people are going to that event. When you make this student grid, also break it down by age and whether it's female or male. You want to be able to look at that special event and find out who it appeals to, what age it appeals to, whether it appeals to a boy or girl, male or female. So when we start breaking things down a little bit more detailed, we could start looking at our events, especially if they're going to be an event that we do on a regular basis over and over and over again. This is essential because when we look at that, we want to be able to tweak our events so that it becomes more appealing to the larger population of our student client base. The fourth thing that I want you to look at after you establish your student grid is looking at whether you're retailing to those individuals. How many of those people bought your T-shirts? How many people of those bought your school jackets? How many of them have bought fighting gear? Or whatever it may be that you require or ask of or desire your students to have. Once you do that and you look at this grid, you might find out that you're sitting on thousands and tens of thousands of dollars in seminars and retail and special events and movie nights that you have an untapped market on. You maybe already have enough client base that you could boost your income right by looking at this by 30 to 40%. Think about that. Number four, establish your monthly quit rate and figure out who's quitting, what age, what sex, boy or girl, male or female, what belt, and what program. You might find out by doing this analysis, this DNA, this student grid, that a good majority of your students that quit over the last 6 months might have been, let's say, for example, 3 to 5 year olds. And out of those 3 to 5 year olds, maybe out of 20 of them, let's use as an example, 18 of them were girls. If that is the case, or whatever your statistics show you, you may want to look at your curriculum. Maybe you might want to look at the instructor. You maybe want to look at the time schedule, and so on and so forth. Just recently when I did this with one of my elite clients that I do a regular consulting on a weekly basis, we looked at their student grid, and we found out that the majority of people who were quitting right before he does a 3-year upgrade to his Black Belt Club. So looking at that grid, we were able to tell, and he knew this, that the majority of the people were quitting. Like he would lose 30, 40, 50 people just because they weren't willing to commit to that 3-year program. Now, I know we want our students to commit to our program, but that was almost like throwing away the baby with the bathwater. You know, it doesn't make sense to me just because we're committed to a certain vision that we wouldn't have an option available for those people that are just not willing to commit. Or, looking at it from the outside in, saying, what can we do prior to make them more ready to upgrade to that program? What could we do to educate? So our focus should be on education of those clients, pre-selling them, preparing them for this next program. So we're not looking at it from an analytical mindset. We're just saying, well, you know, at this level, we lose all these people. And we try to just keep on plugging along with the same system that we have, preparing people or getting them in and knowing that half of them are going to quit. That's just absolute insanity. That's like saying I own a restaurant and I serve my food, and I see this on my favorite show, Kitchen Nightmares with Chef Gordon Ramsay. And if any of you guys know him out there, let him know I'm talking about him so that he could give me a call. But anyway, in a more serious note, I find that you know, he looks at it from the obvious, black and white, and he's able to revamp and change the menu and make it more appealable, simplify it. So most restaurants are having a problem because it takes too long to cook these extravagant meals that are on the menu. He simplifies and shortens the amount that's offered so that they're able to put them out on a more of a, and I'd have to say like a conveyor belt mentality, more of a commercial mentality where it's easy to pump these foods out, so it's easy for people to get their service and get the quality service and be satisfied with the food. Anyway, four, establish your monthly quit rate. Figure out who's quitting at what age, what sex, male or female, what belt, and what program. And try to find that if there's something that's in the higher majority of people, that's what we need to look at. We have to be a little bit more of an investigative reporter. Number five, and the final one on this of the five questions, is find out during sales what are working, what is working with your sales process. If people are walking through the door, then your marketing is working. If they're calling on the phone, then your marketing is working. Don't think that just because the sign-up ratio is low, that the marketing ratio is low. You have to really look at the two. If your phone is ringing, and you're not getting people to come in the door, then you got to get better at getting the people to come in for the trial. If they're calling and you're getting them to set up the trial and they're not showing, you got to do better at getting them to show. If the phone is ringing and they're calling and they're showing and you're not signing them up, or you're only signing up a small portion, then you have to get better at your sales process. The question is now, if the people are not calling and the phone is not ringing, then we have to get better at our marketing process. So if people are walking through the door, then your marketing is working. If they're not signing up, then your sales process is not working. We need to work on a sales process. There has to be a process. What is it that you can do better to get better at sales? Tomorrow, actually tonight, I'm actually going to a Brian Tracy seminar, which is, I'm so excited for it. It's in the evening. I'm going to dinner with him. And then tomorrow, I'm taking my entire program managerial staff to this Brian Tracy seminar. Of course, if you don't know about Brian Tracy, he's one of the greatest guys as far as sales, and he wrote the book and the audio tape called The Psychology of Selling, and I recommend that to you. Brian Tracy, The Psychology of Selling. So remember, what is it that you can do better to get better at the sign-up? Why not change the way you think? This is another problem with the way business owners think. In my schools, we're sitting on about 1,000 leads. Some of them are dead in the water because we waited too long, while others still have potential. Through the year, with all the marketing things that we have in place, we've received many inquiries. So what is it that we need, my school, what is it that I need to do? I need to get better on the follow-up and the follow-through. The thing is that a minimum of people that, let's say we have 1,000 leads, I'd be happy if I signed up 300 of those people. That's close to $750,000 in income. Yet, I'm caught up in that process where I'm still marketing, still getting leads, but I'm not really, I don't have a, you know, cutthroat, amazing sales team that's knocking dead those sales and closing them. It's not the economy. When I want to look, I could blame the economy, and I do to some extent, but I really have to look at my sales processes. I have to look at my program managers, and I have to look at getting those people more efficient at what they do, tweaking what's going on so that we could get better, and in turn, I don't have to market. The reality is that we run on this special kind of mentality, this, I'm going to use a calculator as an example, where I hit 1 and 1, and 1 and 1 doesn't equal 2. In my mind, I think that if I want to get more students, and my processes are working the way they are, the way I get more students is double the amount of things that are going to bring in more leads, so that even though that we're, for lack of better words, cruddy at what we're doing, we are going to bring in more students. Really what I need to do is get better at what we're doing off the same amount of leads that we have, so in the end result we're signing up more people. I hope that makes sense, and I'm not rambling about that. So we need to really walk the talk and talk the talk, walk the walk and talk the talk. Now, also too, just as here's a thought, what is it that we need to do that could get us better at the follow-up and the follow-through? And at minimum, if we had leads coming through the door and we sold them a T-shirt or, you know, a book or a DVD, even if they didn't sign up at our school, we're still tapping into that retail marketplace. So why is it that we're letting people walk away empty-handed? Why isn't it that we're getting them involved in some capacity, whether it be a small one-week program or a seminar? Why aren't we tapping into those people and offering a seminar? Even though they didn't join as a regular member, maybe their schedule is too tight right now, but they could come to a 2-hour seminar or a 1-hour seminar. We could offer them a free seminar on child safety and awareness to kind of encourage them to get involved in our program. That might be the thing that pushes them over the edge and gets them involved. The thought is, look at this with an investigative eye. Before I go on, obviously I've been talking for 35 minutes. I want to open up the line, the phone, for questions if anybody's online and you want to ask a question. If not, I'll go on to a few questions that I see online, and let me refresh that. Because we have probably about like 10 or so people online with us right now. The first question I have from Larry in Akron, Ohio, and it says, what are the best marketing tools for the month of December? And he also went on to say, should I do a New Year's Eve sleepover? I already have a big Christmas party with Santa Claus in town, and what else should I do to get the dojo through the toughest month of the year? Well, I think that I answered a lot of that on what I talked about. But first off, I don't personally recommend sleepovers anymore. We stopped doing them in our schools only because of the liability ratio, you know, having someone overnight and so on. Plus, it's a lot more work for a minimal amount of money. So my staff actually helped me overcome this because I was doing sleepovers four times a year, and it was just a horror show. We'd be up 24 hours. We'd be exhausted the next day. The staff was grumpy, and they kind of there was a mutiny, and they kind of got away from doing the sleepovers. Anyway, we started doing nights out, parents' night outs, and we do them for 3 or 4 hours, and then the parents go out to dinner. They have a good time. They take their kids home. We charge just about the same amount of money, within like $5. And the way I look at it is it takes away the liability. There's no chance of, you know, anything funny going on. And I know that we watch our staff, we watch our students, but sometimes just behind closed doors, a kid is with another kid and something goes on, the liability is just too high. But my answer is I don't know if I recommend sleepovers any longer. I also recommend a Christmas party, and I think that that's awesome. Do the Christmas party. And maybe do it as like a potluck dinner. We used to do a Christmas party every year, and it was free to all our parents. The only thing they had to do to pay to get in was bring a can of food that we donated to the soup kitchen. So that was an idea for you guys. And the month of December is not at all a tough month. It's only a tough month if we lay off our advertising, lay off our marketing, lay off our promotion. So all the things that I talked about you should be doing. You should be pumping up your referral program. You should be doing specials, discounts, asking people to buy memberships, even if it's a free membership. One thing that we did during Christmas, or that we do during Christmas, is we give away a 2-week free pass. We put it in a really nice envelope and we wrap it. On it, we put a blank sticker that says to and from, and it's a sticker that we print out right on our printer. And we give out 5 to every one of our students, and those students give them out to friends. It's a $99 value. It appears to be a gift certificate that was purchased. People give it to their friends, and it looks and appears as if they just spent money. And we give all our students $500 worth of gift certificates so that they could give them to their friends. And it looks like we're doing a nice thing for them, but in return, we're hoping that they bring their friends in, and they know that if their friend eventually joins, they get referral credits towards prizes and gifts and possibly a free year. Okay, we went on to another question that says, and I'm a little confused about this. It's Scott Wren from White House, and it says, I have to resign at the end of December looking for advice on that. I don't really understand what that question means. So, Scott, if you're still out there, maybe you could retype that question in as to what that means, and I'll answer that. But right now, these are the questions that I had, and now I'm going to jump right back in to what we have. Let me refresh the questions first. Let's see if there are any else on there. Okay, no more. Okay, anyway, getting back to our topic at hand, I wanted to talk to you about this whole entire caution in our economy. Of course, we need to understand that as business owners, we have to be careful where we spend our money. But save money on things that are not necessary rather than saving money on things that are important. I, as a consultant, find that a lot of times people shoot themselves in the foot. Even with my Taking It to the Next Level program, I find that people will cancel that membership because they haven't utilized it. Now, initially when people sign up, they do it because they want to learn from it and they want to get the systems to improve their school, yet they don't put the time and effort into doing it. They don't discipline themselves on learning the systems. And, of course, if you learn the systems and utilize even one or two of the systems, it's going to benefit your school and pay for the program. So my suggestion is cut out the things that, or maybe cut back on things that you might not need to do. For example, if you're looking at your marketing, you might find that you've marketed all year and you ran ads in a local paper. You might find that the return is, very low on that paper. So you have to ask yourself, maybe you should switch to a new paper, or tweak the ad and change it, or cut it out altogether, because you might find out that another avenue is giving you yielding a much higher return. You might find that your referral program is untapped. And I'm going to talk about this real quickly. People always ask me about referrals. And when I say to them, put a referral program in place, people usually jump on it right away. They offer it to their students, and they put out a flyer, or they tell them about it, they hang a sign in the lobby. And just like I said on a phone call not too long ago, I ask my students about the referral program. And I ask my people, my staff, how they're doing on their referrals. And they say, well, we're talking to people and we're asking for referrals. And I said, well, tell me what you're doing. And they said, well, I'm letting people know. I hand them the flyer. We send them the postcard. We show them the sign. I look them in the eyes and I say, well, when did you ask for a referral? And they look at me confused like a deer in the headlights. And they say, well, I asked for a referral. I asked, I showed them the sign, I handed them the flyer, and I told them how to do it. But they never actually asked for a referral. My question to you guys right now on this call, and all of the people who listen, when was the last time you actually called your client and said, hey, Mrs. Jones, you seem to be happy. Is that true? And if they say, oh, yes, Mr. Smith, we're very happy. Well, can I ask you right now for one name, just one name of a friend of your son Johnny or a friend of yours that you think would benefit from our program? I promise not to hound them. If they say they're not interested and tell me to leave them alone, I will. I just want to know who you think could benefit from our program. Obviously, another quote that I love is, the best way to flatter your instructor is by referring someone to him. You could put that on the wall. The best way to flatter your instructor is by referring a member to our studio. Now, if we ask for that and actually say to them, can we have a name? That's asking for a referral. All the other stuff is education and marketing, but we need to ask. I know of some people out there that make it mandatory that every time they have a promotion, the person has to bring a referral. In order to get promoted, they have to refer someone to our school. Now, this comes from a guy who's quite successful in our industry as a consultant that is, has thousands of members in his organization. If it's working for them, why can't we do it? And I'll tell you why. Because most people feel funny. They're embarrassed to actually ask. They're nervous to say, how could I do this? You know, I feel like I'm imposing. You know, if someone says to you, I don't feel comfortable, then ask them, how about after a few more weeks you think about it and I call you back, could you give me at least one? And if we got one referral from one of our members, every one of our members, and let's say you have 50 people in the door, that's 50 potential clients. If you do that four times a year, that's 200 potentials. Even if you signed up half of those or a quarter of those, you're going to sign up 50 new members. The question is, how are you doing that? So anyway, that's a cost-free, discounted, zero-cost advertising thing that you should be doing. Going back to cautious times, our economy, and so on, how many of you are actually going back to your students who quit because they couldn't afford it and offer them a 50% discount? I know that's a bold thing, but 50% of $1,000 is $500. 50% of nothing is zero. I know that we don't want to give away the farm, but we could make this a special program. We could give this away as a one-time only kind of thing. But it's still bringing in income because, you know what, as martial arts schools, it gets tighter. We have to offer this and get whatever we can when we can and grow our schools at the same time. Here's another thing I want you to think about in tough times is talk about working with your accountant on a more regular and closer basis. What is it that your accountant does for you? Is he telling you where to save money, where you're overspending, what maybe you could do better or more intelligently, what you could write off, what you shouldn't be spending money on? How can you get that so that your spending is controlled? As if you had a controller for your school where they look at all spending and they analyze it and then they let you know what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong. Your accountant is a really strong portion of your business. If you only have an accountant that looks at your taxes at the year end and gives you no business advice whatsoever, financial advice, then you have the wrong accountant. So I would invest, not financially, a lot of money in an accountant that could work closer with you, as if you were to work with a stockbroker or an insurance person. Speaking of insurance, what are you guys doing with your insurance guy? Is he investing for you, or is he the kind of guy that just basically just sits back and, you know, takes your money? I know I have one of those that I work with on a regular basis that really doesn't advise me on the right investments. So I always ask myself the question, is if this guy is an expert at giving advice on investment, why isn't he retired as a millionaire at this point? So we have to be real careful at who we take our advice from and make sure we're dealing with the right people and making sure that they're giving us the correct advice. Last but not least, and of course I want to go over some more questions here, is making sure that you're dealing with a mentor. You need to, and you guys and girls and ladies and gentlemen are out on the phone in this conference call right now, might not realize that you have a lot of consulting access at your beck and call. I could be on the phone with you I'm on the phone three times a month for a few hours where all you need to do is call up and ask for a one-on-one appointment. And we could go over any topic that you want. The thing, though, that I ask you to do is to make sure that when you ask a question from any one of the consultants is that you take it and put it into action. I think inaction is probably our biggest enemy in our industry. What we do is we read, we stimulate thought, we talk about, we go to seminars. But I have to tell you, just based on my consulting with my program, again, I'll say the name, taking it to the next level, not just to keep repeating it, but with that program, I find that most people, the majority of people that join, do not use the program. They sign up, they pay money, and they don't follow up and follow through. To me, that is absolute insanity. Remember, we talked about in the beginning of the program, like, what is the difference between a doer and someone who doesn't do anything? You know, what is the difference between those people that are effective and they're looking for and they're doing? And I could tell you is that the results are dramatically different. And when I do one-on-one consulting, I'm talking to people on a regular basis, and I hear nothing but excuses. My area is bad. We can't charge those prices. We're not, you know, that type of school. That doesn't sit with me right, or the morals of it or whatever. And really basically what it is fear. I'd like to see people in the martial art industry succeed. That's my ultimate goal. But sometimes people are their own worst enemy. A question you may want to ask yourself is, what do you need to change personally to become more efficient, a better owner, a better business person, more effective? And what do you need to do within your business to become more profitable? Many times people will tell me, they'll say, well, I don't know my statistics. I don't know that stuff that you just asked me. I don't know how many men or women quit. I don't know how many people join. I don't know what our quit rate is. Those are the basic foundational qualities. It doesn't matter what all this stuff is going on, the hoopla in the industry telling you there's this new marketing campaign. Jump on the MMA bandwagon. I don't know, do a special program. All of that stuff means nothing if you can't keep and maintain the people that you have. And you're not going to retain everybody. We know this as a fact. People are going to quit. They're going to come and go. There's going to be a normal attrition rate within your school. But the majority of us have to look at. And, you know, that old saying is, you know, look within to be able to know what's going on outside of you. You know, you have to point the finger inward and see, why is it that your program is losing 3 to 5-year-olds? Is it because the curriculum doesn't support that mentality? Why is it that, you know, maybe out of all the male and females that you have in the dojo in your school, a good portion of those students are quitting are women or teenagers? Or female teenagers, you need to look at that and find out and do a little bit more of a DNA, you know, kind of analysis, a investigative mindset to find out what the holes are in the bucket. Now, you may ask, why am I talking about all this stuff when maybe you got online thinking that this might have been a conversation about plugging in A or B to get better results, C and D? But really the bottom line is, right now many of you are sitting on the tools that you need. It's just a matter of, you know, me, like on that V8 commercial, smacking the person in the head to get them to be aware that they're blowing what they have, that they're not maximizing what they have, that they're not retailing to who they have, they're not upgrading who they have, they're not selling special events to who they have. We always could bring new people in the door, but we want to make sure that those new people that we bring in the door, they're treated the same way that we want to treat these existing students, and giving them the best service that they could possibly ever get. And that's really it for today. I wanted to know if anyone out there has a question, if anyone's on the phone. If not, I'm going to see if there are no more questions. Let me refresh here online. I'm sorry, Scott, if you're still online, I don't know, you have to re-sign. I'm not really sure what that means. And Mark, I'm glad you're here with us. I don't have a question from you. But anyway, does anyone out there have a question? No? Okay. I'm going to close up by saying these last few things. And I wanted to also talk the last thing about that mentorship program. Right now, if you're working with someone specifically, you're doing a great job. But if not, I would find someone, whether it be a friend in the industry or a bunch of friends in the industry, or possibly, you know, a guy like myself or Kathy Marler or Tommy Lee or whoever's out there that possibly could take you on and answer your questions and help you out and motivate you and work with you and possibly give you their vision from the outside in. Quite often when we're in our business, we're working on our business, or working in our business, not on our business. We need to work on our business. We need to work in our program and, you know, work on the business from the outside in. It's essential that we do it this way so that we can see things clearer. Quite often when I'm doing consulting with some of my one-on-one weekly consulting clients, I am able to just see things from a much more objective point of view because I'm on the outside looking in. Sometimes I actually am able to learn myself based on the analysis of what I'm doing with others, and I have a notepad and I write it down, and I'm able to say, hey, this is something that I should be doing. I'm not just talking the talk and not walking the walk. I want to look at that and possibly be able to, renovate or, revamp or tweak the systems that I'm doing in my school. And it's not just about me saying, you should do this or you should do that. Anyway, again, I wanted to offer you guys this, and I haven't done this in quite some time, is I wanted to make sure that you guys are aware that you can email me at any time at RENSHILINJA, that's Renshi L-I Ninja, at AOL.com. That's Renshi L-I Ninja at AOL.com. And if you're interested right now, I'd like to offer you free, no obligation, tip, what I call ninja marketing tips. And all you do is need to email me and say, I'd like your ninja marketing tips, and I will send you a link to the site. It's not about signing up for anything other than getting this link so that you could look at our 5 marketing campaigns. I have 4 audio messages on there, free of charge. Guaranteed that if you use any one of these, it's going to make you a lot of money in your school and increase your retention and enrollment. I also wanted to offer you the opportunity to email me at any time for any questions on anything that you have, even if, a matter of fact, I'm working with one of my clients last night. He called me and he said, I'm having an issue where I have a mom and she's a pain in the neck and she has 3 kids in my program and she wants to cancel in 5 months because that's when their program is up, but she doesn't want to pay any more for her additional son. She wants him to come for free and utilize some of the monthly income that I'm paying towards these other kids. So basically, without going into the scenario, we basically discussed it and came up with a solution. And I'm happy to do that with you guys, and I'm available for that anytime. Don't ever feel funny. I'd love to work with you, and you could just email me. So anyway, we're going to close up today. I hope you enjoyed our teleseminar. I hope you're going to look at your systems and maximize what you have going and become the most professional you could be at what you have and work on that. And if you need other advice on other things, of course, email me. Go back in our archive, because I've been doing this for 3-plus years, and there are archives on so many different topics that I've talked about, not only myself, but John Gason, who was on there at one point, Melanie Schumann, Kathy Marler, so many other people. And it's just a whole entire library of knowledge that is just free to Member Solutions clients. And the last and final thing is check out takingittothenextlevel.com. I guarantee you, and if you want, you can take advantage of a free month on Taking It to the Next Level. Just call up one of your reps at Member Solutions, and they'll talk to you about how you could take advantage of that free month. I want to thank you guys for being online with me today. I enjoyed it, and I hope it was beneficial to you. And my last thing is I hope that you take your business and your life to the next level. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next month. Take care.